Welcome to It's All Political, the San Francisco Chronicle's political podcast. I'm Joe Garofoli, the Chronicle's senior political writer, and today our guest is California Secretary of State Alex Padilla. Ballots are being mailed out to every registered California voter right now, so wanted to talk to the person who has one of the hardest jobs in politics right now, running the election system in California. We run through all of the nightmare situations that he's preparing for here. Cyber attacks, misinformation, ransomware. And oh yeah, he's trying to make sure that people can cast ballots safely during a pandemic. Padilla also leads a national organization of secretaries of state, so he'll talk about potential problems going on elsewhere. Padilla's a smart guy. He's an MIT grad, and he always projects a measure of calm when he's talking about things that have many people reaching for antacids. Nevertheless, you might want to pour a glass of your favorite beverage before listening to this, my conversation with Alex Padilla.
All right, Secretary of State, Alex Padilla, from your office in Los Angeles to my home in Oakland, welcome back to It's All Political.
Thanks for having me back. And, it's the season. General election, technically 5 weeks away, but we're starting to call Tuesday, November 3rd as simply the last day to vote because of all the early voting options.
All right. Well, we're going to save some time at the end for, I know you have a lot of sort of news you can use, things to talk about, and we'll do that at the end. And I have to start with one disclaimer. I rarely set limitations on what guests can talk about, but I will permit no gloating about the Lakers or the Dodgers on this podcast.
Fair enough.
I will end the podcast if I hear any gloating.
Hey, well, California as a whole is pretty well represented in MLB playoffs, so
we'll see you in the World Series. I know we're going to save the nitty-gritty till the end, but let's make one thing clear here for the listeners, is that voting in California, we will not have the ballots counted on election night. There will be votes, there will be ballots to be counted, for weeks to come. When do you think that they will be counted by? What's a realistic expectation?
Yeah, I think it'll take a few weeks after the election to finish counting ballots, and all for good reason. You know, and it's nothing new in California, frankly, with the popularity of vote by mail over several years. Most recently, the March primary, more than 70% of ballots cast were vote by mail ballots. So that's great in terms of access to democracy for all eligible voters, but it does mean a little bit more work on the back end, the signature verification, if nothing else, to make sure that ballots are properly processed and counted. And so as is tradition in California, come election night, we have an okay sense for how most contests will turn out. But for close contests and for final results, it does take a matter of weeks between ballot processing, ballots that aren't even in hand quite yet on election night, but were mailed off in time by the voter. Of course, the post-election audits, because we want to ensure both the accuracy and the integrity of the results. And so a few weeks after election day is when we'll get the final numbers. I think the difference this year is that there's so many other states that have significantly ramped up vote by mail for the first time in response to the pandemic. But we're talking critical states like, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Ohio, much more consequential in the outcome of the presidential contest. I think that's what has folks a little unnerved. There's a likelihood that the evening of Tuesday, November 3rd comes and goes, and we don't have an official winner declared for who will be the next president of the United States. And if that happens, Joe, it's not a moment to panic. It's a moment to be patient, right? It's the process at work. It's a transparent process. My colleagues across the country, both sides of the aisle, will tell you, we'd rather get it right than get it fast. But be wary of anybody claiming victory in any contest when there's still a ton of votes to be counted.
Okay, I want to get to that in a second, because you wear another hat. That's the head of the Democratic Association of Secretaries of State. So you have a national perspective too. Let's just finish up on California for a second. As you said, the state sends ballots to every registered voter. Now, some estimates I've heard that, in fact, Willie Brown in our paper the other day said that 10% of California's 20 million registered voters aren't where the state thinks they are. You alluded to some of the safeguards in place. How do we know that, that these ballots are being filled out by the people who they're intended for? talk about some of the safeguards in place.
Sure. And let's kind of break down the process into the several steps that there are, right? So claims that you may be hearing about, California is only sending ballots to active registered voters in advance of this November's election. And it's very much good news that we have record registration yet again, more than 21 million voters on the rolls. And just to give you a snapshot on how far we've come on the accuracy of our voter rolls. When I was first sworn in as Secretary of State, there was about 17.7 million voters on the rolls. So the 3.5 million that we're talking about since then, those are relatively new registrants. And so we have pretty recent information for them. The success of automatic voter registration through the DMV, while most people focus on the more than 2 million people that have registered to vote in the process, there's also another 5 million plus that have that were previously registered and had a chance to update their registration information. And another 5 million plus that came through said, nope, I'm already registered, nothing to update here, no changes. So a good chunk of the registered voters on file, we've had a relatively recent opportunity to make sure their information is up to date and correct. And of course, we're promoting verify your registration status between now and the election. Folks can go to vote.ca.gov, confirm their registration is up to date and current. So when we mail ballots, we're mailing them to a current address. So that's at the front end. On the back end, right, even if a ballot was sent out, it's not like somebody else can cast it for you. There's a number of security measures built into vote by mail, including the signature verification. When vote by mail ballots return to the county office, the very first thing county officials do is compare the signature on that envelope with the signature on file as part of your voter registration record, you know, to confirm the identity of the voter. If the voter does not sign the envelope or the signatures do not match, the county will attempt to contact the voter. By law, they have to attempt to contact the voter to cure any signature issue. Of course, if the voter says, hey, that wasn't me, we have something to look into, but that's extremely, extremely rare. It's usually, you know, somebody forgot to sign the envelope or their signature might have changed over time. I know mine has.
Yeah, mine has too, yes. the other thing you get, California in general gets criticized from by even California Republicans, is the legal practice of quote-unquote ballot harvesting, which is someone who is not you can take your ballot and put it in the drop box or mail it for you. What are your safeguards to prevent nefarious activity? Let's say I go I go canvassing in a Republican neighborhood, and then I collect ballots. I said, "Don't worry, I'll drop that in the mailbox for you," and then I toss them in the garbage can. What are the safeguards in place now? And I think some of this is the track and trace we have going too.
Okay, I'm not sure what Republicans want you to believe when they use the term ballot harvesting, but here's what we do in California: we empower the voter to decide when and how to return their ballot, even if that includes asking somebody for assistance in returning the ballot for them. You know, maybe it's a family member in the same household, maybe it's a neighbor, maybe it's a coworker. We trust the voter to decide for themselves. And even then, frankly, it's a very small number that do that because of so many options voters have to return the ballot. Right. For this November, again, every active registered voter will receive a ballot by mail and have multiple options for how to return their ballot, either by mail, and California is so committed, return postage is prepaid, so voters don't even need to scramble for stamps. We have the Postmark Plus policy, right? When you mail it back, as long as your ballot is postmarked on or before election day, you'll have up to 17 days after the election for the ballot to arrive and still be counted. So we've planned against any unforeseen delays in the postal service. But for folks who may not be as comfortable mailing it back, they have the option of delivering it to any ballot drop box in their county over the course of weeks leading up to the election, or to drop it off in person at any in-person voting location, either on or before election day. And yes, if after all that, somebody decides they prefer to enlist somebody they know and trust to return the ballot for them, that is their right in California. And the person returning the ballot for them also has to sign the envelope. So we do have a little bit of a, you know, chain of custody documentation there. And for ultimate public confidence in vote by mail at large, we're encouraging people to sign up for Where's My Ballot? All voters in California can sign up to receive alerts by email, by text message, or by automated phone call on the status of their ballots through the delivery process, both on its way to the voter, on its way back to the county. Imagine, Joe, getting an alert that your ballot was received and the day your ballot was, and the day your ballot was counted. So great for public confidence and obviously great for security.
I love that. I encourage everybody to do that. Let's look nationally. We started to talk about this. You are a lead a national group called the Democratic Association of Secretaries of State. So you have a very much a national perspective here. You've been a leader nationally on these issues. The Brookings Institute has been grading the states on their preparedness for handling ballots during COVID times. California, you'll be happy to know, received an A. So we'll give you a gold star. But the concern is, which you alluded to earlier, these are battleground states like Wisconsin, Georgia, and Florida received Cs. What is your concern about the ability of some of these states to be able to handle things?
Look, well, there's, I guess you can argue there's both some upsides and some downsides for the delegation in the U.S. Constitution of elections to states. So it's resulted in every state does things a little bit differently. I think by and large, you know, in the past, it was very much a, you know, voter rights, voter enfranchisement versus voter suppression debate. This year, it's all through the lens of COVID-19. Right. What are we doing in response to COVID to afford voters safer options for being able to cast their ballot and protect their health? You know, we saw examples of what not to do during the primaries. Remember Wisconsin, remember the state of Georgia. Those should be warnings, not previews of what to expect in November. And I think most states with secretaries, both Democrat and Republican, have been doing those very things, right? To expanding vote by mail eligibility and capacity and infrastructure, no safer way to vote and protect your health and from the comfort and safety of your own home. But we're also maintaining the in-person options for people who need it. And I think most states are to different extent following that playbook. You know, we get into a little bit of differences in terms of the return policy. You know, some states it has to be in hand at the elections office come election night when the polls close. Other states have that postmark plus 3 policy. I think Michigan now has postmark plus 14. California has postmark plus 17. So you do have those distinctions. I think if there's one thing that concerns me is, frankly, the election misinformation and disinformation coming from sources, sadly, both foreign and domestic. Right? Voters deserve accurate official information on how to register, how to participate. You know, our free and fair elections are the bedrock of our democracy, and anybody who's trying to convince you that it is not safe or limit your options for how to participate, that's a disservice, frankly, to our democracy.
Well, many Democrats in the last week of it were freaked out by this article in The Atlantic that spelled out a nightmare scenario. Did you get a chance to read that article?
I did review that. I think it does a pretty good job of summarizing what we've been suspecting all along.
Yeah, and so what, first of all, it's premised on President Trump for months and months errantly saying that voting by mail is rampant with fraud. This Atlantic article lays out a scenario where the Trump campaign is going to ask Republican leaders in battleground states, you know, where they fear that there might be fraud, to bypass the popular vote and select their own electors to the Electoral College. Is this a legitimate scenario, Mr. Secretary, or is this, to use a phrase that I recently learned, quote unquote, doom porn?
I mean, look, you know, sadly.
But is this legit? Could this really happen, or is this exaggerated?
Look, if you would have asked me this 4 years ago, I would have said, you know, no way. This is just too far-fetched. But sadly, look at what our nation has been through for the last 4 years. Just when you think, you know, things can't get any crazier out there, something happens, or there's some allegation, or there's some tweet, you know, or there's some conspiracy theory being amplified, you know, that leads us scratching our head. And elections, unfortunately, are not immune. If the number and types of litigation before election day have been any indicator, right? The Trump campaign, the Republican Party, made it abundantly clear they have more than a $20 million fund challenging changes to policy or law that are making it safer for voters to vote. By the way, they haven't been very successful. But it seems to me that that's a warm-up act. If there's close elections in very consequential states, I think everybody on both sides of the aisle fully expect a litigation war in the days and weeks after the election. It's been called Bush v. Gore on steroids. If the election's not that close, then I think maybe we can avoid that scenario only in places where the election is that close. I do think there's going to be a flurry of lawsuits. We should fully expect that. Again, if the race is that close, trust the process. Don't feed into the misinformation and the conspiracy theories out there. If the outcome of litigation has been any indicator, I think the judiciary branch will act very reasonably and let the true winner in each state be determined and carry the day.
You sound like you're confident that's a little bit that that scenario in the Atlantic article could happen. It's very unlikely to.
Anything is possible, certainly under the Trump administration, but it's not too likely. But got to hope for the best and prepare for the worst.
We'll be back with more of my conversation with Alex Padilla.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
And now, here's more of my conversation with California Secretary of State Alex Padilla.
Here's a little bit more doom porn for you. That is. I know you're going to use this term later today, so I'm just.
Just not with my kids.
Not with your kids. No, please, with adults only. The New York Times reporting today that there's a Texas company that sells software to cities that use it to display results on election nights was hit by ransomware. And ransomware, for our listeners, is when cyber hackers take your data or a city's data or a county's data and make it inaccessible until the victim pays the ransom, usually in like cryptocurrency. So have we had any of these ransomware attacks in California, and how concerned about it are you here?
Right. Look, have there been efforts towards that end in California? Undoubtedly. Have there been successful attempts is the question. And at least in the elections world, we have not. Right. Going back to the 2016 election, when we first started hearing chatter about cyber threats to our elections, foreign interference in a number of ways, we came up to speed real quick. There was this quick marriage between elections officials across the country and the intelligence community at the federal level. And so in California, anyway, we've done pretty much everything we could hope to do to ensure the integrity of our elections infrastructure, from working with the legislature and the governor to fund upgrade or replacement of older voting systems to newer systems that meet higher security standards, ongoing cybersecurity training for state and local elections office staff, right? You can have the best infrastructure in place, from hardware to firewalls and encryption technology. But if you have a staff that are, clicking on malicious links because of some phishing attempt, that just undermines the whole system. So ongoing training, retraining, simulation exercises. And I think the biggest piece here is general public awareness. Right. Don't fall for everything you see in your Twitter feed or on Facebook. We've got to have some common sense around what is or isn't real information. And I think in totality, California's defense posture is pretty strong, but we can't take anything for granted. We've got to stay on our toes and stay one step ahead of the bad folks.
What keeps you up at night? What is your nightmare scenario on election night and the days afterwards? Those 17 days, those weeks afterwards. What keeps you up at night?
Yeah, again, not to take anything for granted. We have a long checklist that we run through every single day. But if it's the one biggest source of grief for me, it's the potential damage done by election misinformation and disinformation. So, part of our efforts for between now and November 3rd is reminding the public for official, reliable information about the election and how to participate, whether it's registering or voting options. Go to the official source, your county elections office or the California Secretary of State. We have a lot of tools and resources. We've made it easy this time, all in one location, vote.ca.gov. Whether it's registering to vote, verifying your registration status, signing up for Where's My Ballot, finding your polling place when the time comes, cybersecurity information, even to sign up as a poll worker. We're making a pitch for additional poll workers this November.
Well, we have enough, by the way. You and LeBron James are making this pitch. will we have enough?
Look, I think we're on track to have enough, but you can never have too many. And so even though we're on track, we're still inviting people who are healthy, willing, and able to work as poll workers this November to sign up. Go to vote.ca.gov, click on poll worker, and we'll connect you with the county to get to new poll workers the training they need, the PPE they need to stay safe, and compensation. Poll workers do earn a stipend for their service.
You get a couple $100 for that, correct?
It depends on the county. It's usually about $100 a day, give or takes. Many counties have a bonus for bilingual poll workers. So okay. There you go.
I want to talk to you about Consumer Watchdog came out the other day, and they are proposing, they have a report about to make it easier, they say, to collect signatures for ballot measures, right? And they want to allow online signatures to be valid to collect the, instead of someone standing in front of Safeway with a clipboard, that costs $3 million at least in most cases to gather enough signatures to get it on the ballot. They say, why should online signatures not count? Right now, the courts say they're not valid for ballot initiative. What do you think about this? Should that happen? Should that be legit?
So, I mean, I think I'm definitely supportive of the concept. It was proposed, I don't know if it was the first time, but I remember when I was in the Senate, Senator Mark Leno had a similar proposal, and for obvious reasons, questions about security and protecting the integrity of the petition gathering process. How do you know signatures are legitimate? Is there any way to, write some sort of code undermines the system, and all of a sudden there's tons of measures that are qualifying for the ballots, and we're not sure about whether they were legitimately collected or not. So I think until we can address those security concerns, we shouldn't allow it. I don't hear too many people complaining that the ballot isn't long enough in 2020 or 2018 or 2016.
No one is, but
again, As with everything else, it's now also viewed through the lens of COVID. And if we want to keep petition gatherers and voters safe from a public health perspective and have this access to the initiative or even the referendum process as accessible as possible, then it's something worth looking at. But again, just like we can't vote online for obvious reasons, elections are a little bit unique. Our democracy is a little unique to paying a parking ticket online or, ordering from, Postmates or DoorDash online.
Yeah. You talked earlier, a couple minutes ago, about misinformation and such. What are you happy with how the social media companies have been policing what's been online? And could they do more? And should they do more? And what should they do?
Wow, how much time do we have here? Because that's a long one. And maybe that's a whole episode in and of itself. Look, I appreciate the various social media companies for the steps that they have taken. But clearly, there is a lot more to do. I think consistency, number one, and maybe not across platforms, that'd be ideal, but at least within platforms, consistency for how they apply their guidelines or restrictions in terms of claims of what's happening or what's not happening in the elections space. And I think here's the biggest one is really the distinction between advertising and actual content. It's one thing to say we're going to shut down political advertising or put limits on it. But if the same people, instead of for paying advertising, are still posting, tweeting misleading information and working their way to manipulate that platform to amplify it, it has the same effect as paid advertisement. So we have a great foundation, at least in California, for monitoring misinformation online, getting misleading posts, tweets to be quickly reviewed by Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, etc., and have them respond pretty promptly when it's clearly erroneous and misleading. So we have a good foundation to work on. That's one of the other tools at vote.ca.gov. Click on election cybersecurity, and you can report anything suspicious for our review, and we'll try to get it addressed as quickly as possible.
I want to ask you a couple quick national political questions. You've been on the campaign trail as well for Joe Biden and your friend Kamala Harris. Biden has been underperforming with Latino voters in some areas, in particular in Florida. Why is that? And what can he do about it in the next 35 days?
Yeah, well, I think it's a combination. There's not one, single reason. I think at the risk of overgeneralizing, I've seen Latino voters sort of make up their mind a little bit later than others when it comes to, ballot measures or candidates at different levels of government. I also think it's a reflection of, look, the Latino community is not a monolith. We're very diverse. What makes up the Latino community in the Bay Area, for example, is a little different than Los Angeles. And that's within the same state, let alone yes. Chicago, New York, Dallas, or Miami. So is it more Central American, more Mexican American, more Cuban American, more, or more of a mix of all of the above? I think that plays out in poll after poll and frankly, how voters cast their ballots in every election. So that's the beauty of our country. We embrace our diversity, not just culturally and socially. It means a little bit more work sometimes to embrace that diversity from a political strategy and outreach standpoint, just as it is in building the economy, right? In some ways, there's a parallel discussion to be had on Proposition 16 on this November's ballot in California.
And should yes, we... also, which is in trouble. This is the one that would reverse... affirmative action requirements in California.
So if we go back, go back to the polling in 1996, the Latino community was not very reliable in early polls, but ended up being the voting bloc that voted against Prop 209 at the highest rate. So we're still 5 weeks out, only a couple before people are voting by mail. So expect the campaigns, whether it's the presidential, whether it's Prop 16 or anything else, to begin in full force to educate and persuade voters. And we'll see the results on election day.
Has Biden done enough to outreach to Latino voters?
Look, I think he's done a big amount. Is it ever going to be enough? It depends on who you ask. But, I guess we'll know on election day. How did states like not just California and Texas and Florida do, but states like Arizona and Colorado and, New York and even
Georgia,
Georgia, Virginia, Maryland, North Carolina. The Latino community is everywhere these days and could be very consequential in some of the closest states.
If Biden were to win, Kamala Harris would become the vice president. There would be an opening here in California for a Senate seat. And Governor Newsom would be able to choose whomever he wanted to fill the rest of Kamala Harris's term. Your name is at the top of many lists, near the top of many, including one that I put out. You and the governor share close ties. You're personal friends. You're also, your political people are tight. Have you or your people contacted him or his people and said, hey, there's an opening. I'm into it.
Look, here's the reality. Am I flattered to be in that conversation and on those lists? Absolutely. Right. I love public service, been doing it for many years. I think I'm getting pretty good at it. But if the last 20 minutes are any indicator, we are laser focused on this November's election. The stakes are just too huge, not just politically for all the issues that we care about in the country as citizens and as voters, but particularly as a Secretary of State for California, right? The largest electorate, the most diverse electorate of any state in the nation. And even though we're not a presidential battleground state per se, as we saw in 2018, a number of House seats that are close and very consequential in determining the majority in the House of Representatives. So, you know, I oversee elections administration as if we are the ultimate battleground state, right? We're the big enchilada if anybody wanted to wreak havoc in American democracy, and a number of down ballot opportunities for that mischief. So, you know, we got to be on our toes. We got to be 100% vigilant and, you know, come November 4th or maybe come Thanksgiving with final results, you know, we can see what the landscape looks like at that point.
Okay, but so you have not contacted him or to talk about that yet?
So look, between COVID, between wildfires for the governor, you know, but he's got a deadline this Wednesday for signing or vetoing bills that pass through the legislature. You know, my focus on elections, we've been a little too busy right now.
All right. Well, last I said I'd give you a couple minutes and just any other you know, nuts and bolts things for voters, what they should do. You've very deftly inserted them throughout our conversation. You are just so on message today. Anything else we should know, voters should know about security, any other websites you want to give out or things they should know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Look, you know, despite what you hear from other sources, you can trust vote by mail. It is safe, it is secure, and it is convenient, right? It's the ballot comes to your home and you can mail it back without having to scramble for stamps. But I think the big two messages I'll leave you with is number one, let's get ready. If you're not registered to vote, the question is, what are you waiting for? We make it easy. Go to vote.ca.gov. It takes a couple of minutes. You can do it online. If you're already registered to vote, it's always a good idea to verify your registration status. Again, go to vote.ca.gov. Call up your voter registration record. Make sure that your address is up to date and current. So we send you your vote by mail ballot to your current address. And if you're willing, share an email address with us. We now have the ability to email every voter in California directly that we have an email address for, so we can send you the latest updates or changes if necessary between now and November 3rd. And sign up for Where's My Ballot. Regardless of when or how you vote, that alert confirming that your ballot was received and counted is great for peace of mind. So those are the three things you can do to get ready today. The second last message here is make a plan. How will you choose to vote, by mail or in person? Whichever it is, do it early. Don't wait for the last day. It's your legal right to have your ballot postmarked on election day if you so choose, or to show up at 7:30, 7:45 on election night and vote in person. But the more people we can encourage to vote early, whether it is by mail or in person, we're hoping to keep the lines shorter, the crowd sizes smaller, and the environment safer on election day. So make a plan and vote early.
And will you commit here today to wearing an A's cap in public after they defeat the Dodgers in the World Series?
And possibly have to take down the Kirk Gibson poster? I don't know. That's a lot to ask.
Oh, that hurts. That hurts. All right. Alex Padilla, thank you for being back on It's All Political. Good luck over the next few weeks. You have one of the hardest jobs in show business. So good luck to you and to all of us.
Thank you, Joe. Stay safe. Keep your masks on, everybody.
I'd like to thank you all for listening and hope that you and your families are safe and healthy. I'd like to thank Secretary of State Alex Padilla for being here today. I'd like to thank Taya Francesca Price for producing this episode. And a shout out to our fabulous theme music, by the way, which is Cattle Call, and it's written by Randy Clark and performed by Randy Clark and Crow Song. And remember, no matter what kind of doom porn you prefer, it's all political.